Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. Today, my guest is Christian Krock. The best thing for you to know is that it's spelled K-R-A-C-H-T. Some time ago, 3 years almost precisely, I found a book called Imperium. I thought it was fascinating. It was about a man who fighting the battle of what it is healthy to eat, ended up eating more or less only coconuts, founding an island on which they only eat coconuts, growing sicker and sicker and more miserable. We followed this Candidian fable until it led to, as necessary, its unhappiness. I came to have its author, Christian Krock, on my program with great pleasure. It's a very interesting book. It was published by Farrar, Straus and Giroux as his new book called The Dead. Those of you who know a novella called The Dead by James Joyce are not wrong to think of it, but you see, part of the subject of these books is authenticity. How do you lead the real life? What is real and what's a fake? This particular one called The Dead takes place before World War II. Film in particular is being presented as the great new art form. And then comes World War II. And it seems to the Japanese, who have Mizoguchi and great filmmakers, that this is their great contribution to world culture. But instead, it's time for film to do its job as propaganda. The Americans come to them and say, if you don't raise the embargo against American film being shown in Japan, we are going to cast only evil, villainous Asiatics in the villains' roles. Japan didn't feel strong enough to stand up to this. What do? They ask Germany to come help. They form a celluloid axis with the idea that they will present an alternative to this commercial American film, but nothing is honorable. Nothing works out the way that it should, the way that it could, the way that we would want it to. It has, you know, more tricks than a circus. We encounter an act, antagonal, if I'm not mistaken, purple pencil that keeps reappearing, but for no particular reason. The joke is reappearance. The joke is modernism. So it's a book that in its way is being presented to stomp down the possibility of meaning. Am I right so far?
It sounds reasonable and feasible. There are many MacGuffins in this book, and the pale violet pencil is one of them. And the nucleus of the book is a real occurrence. Charlie Chaplin was very much loved in Japan in the early 30s, just as Japan was hesitating to adapt itself to talkies and sound cinema. So he traveled to Japan with his manservant, who was Japanese, and reveled in the attention that he was getting there. What happened was that the Navy decided to kill the Prime Minister and Chaplin at the same time. Chaplin, of course, had gone to a performance of know in my book and in sumo wrestling with in real life and wasn't there. And so they just killed, they just managed to shoot the Prime Minister of Japan.
And so what we have here is a book in which an art form is giving way to a political propaganda machine. As is typical, art often loses. It just does. Except perhaps in novels by writers like my guest, Christian Kronk. But it is a book that says, stop it. Stop thinking that everything is going to lead to a conclusion. Mm. And it's told to us immediately by a fabulous epigraph from Virginia Woolf, who says, what is life? That's the question. Something not necessarily leading to a plot. They mean to kill Chaplin and the Prime Minister, but Chaplin has other fish to fry. Yunichiro Tanizaki says, I have only this one heart. No one can know it but me. And it's the other theme of the book, which is privacy. We all have our private life, and fiction and movies want to tear our privacy from us, want to turn everything into recognizable platform. But we're warned. The book begins with something that happens outside the time frame of the 30s and the 40s. The book begins with a replication of the suicide of Yukio Mishima. Yes, tell about it.
It has two frames, the book. And of course, yes, the first frame is a suicide, a seppuku, in a nondescript room in Tokyo somewhere of an officer who's done something and he kills himself. And it's a bit of a shock at the beginning because it's sort of very visceral and disgusting in a way. And this is, of course, filmed through an aperture in the wall. And so the two frames that are surrounding this book is a snuff movie, basically. The second frame is that the film director, Emil Nägeli, who's sent to Japan, a Swiss person, invents the Nouvelle Vague in the early 30s. He just films anything and scriptless and throws it all together. And of course, he's 30 years too early and no one understands it.
But I would say that there's a third frame as well. Hmm. In our knowledge of modern culture, in addition to the suicide of Yukio Mishima, we have the writer Georges Bataille, who had a collection of photographs of people being tortured, bleeding, murdered.
In China.
And the Japanese Minister of Film has a copy of this collection of photographs, completely unrooted in time, that he takes as being, in fact, disgusting, while he sends to Germany, to the German Minister of Film. What is his name?
His name is Hugenberg, Alfred Hugenberg, who was a terrible, terrible man.
He's to be replaced by Goebbels, yeah. A more terrible man, I think. But he essentially says, look at this. Look at what we're making in Japan.
Look what we can do.
Look at what we can do in terms of the ugliness we're capable of demonstrating. A person willing, a Japanese person willing to surrender his life to his country for a minor misdemeanor. Look at that. Won't you send us a film director to come to Japan to make movies sort of like this one? Let's enter the propaganda war in which movies are speaking for our cultures. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Christian Kronk about his novel, The Dead. So I would say that this is a great book in the Voltairean sense of the defeat of optimism, the defeat of culture. We're watching it before our eyes as culture is replaced by a battle between rival powers who are trying to attain world hegemony. And with world hegemony will come not great art, but great propaganda, extraordinary propaganda. And by the end of World War II, if not before, American film becomes the film to imitate, not the great films that have been being made in Germany by Fritz Lang, but the films that are being made in America by Fritz Lang. Everyone is running away from their homes in order to debase the culture they began with. Yeah? Something like
yes,
this.
Yes, which is also where everyone ends up. Everyone ends up in Los Angeles in this book. And it doesn't end well at all. Everyone is cursed. There are curses on people. And, of course, it also sometimes moves itself into a zone of sleep where sleep, death, film, and dreams intersect, which is the netherworld of the dead.
Very brilliantly done, because in this book, the various ministers of film and the propagandists, when treated to the real thing, what do? They fall asleep.
Yes.
They're not capable of watching a film all the way through to its finish. It's not very different from those executives today who say, I can tell if a film will make money by looking at the first 10 minutes.
Right.
If that.
Yeah. When Nageli, the Swiss film director, ends up going back to Switzerland and showing his film, which he believes is a masterpiece, of course, people fall asleep. And it's a bit sad, but it's also because falling asleep during films that deal with transcendence or that seek to portray transcendence, such as Dreyer, Ozu,
Bresson,
Schrader, Tarkovsky.
We sit there watching a novel in which all failure comes to its foreordained end, and nothing that you could have predicted, in fact, goes the way it ought to. Charlie Chaplin, far from the beneficent tramp, actually kills someone during the course of the book, or causes his death at any rate. And the book, if you've always wanted to read a book in which the movies are given responsibility for making the wrong things happen, this is the book for you. It's very funny, it's very wild, it's very unpredictable. What people want is just what they can't have. And they are so hungry to be proclaimed geniuses by people who would never know genius if it bit them on the nose. And that is what's taken to be the story of how the movies decline into a second-rate sideshow phenomenon. Now, it's not that my guest has disrespect for movies. What he's trying to say is that these were once the best of a new art form, capable, with the camera's eye, of looking at the world and seeing the world becoming more than itself, becoming transcendent, becoming meaningful in the act of being viewed. And what's at work in this book against this transcendence is the War of Nations.
Germany and Japan that wish to subjugate Asia. And so the idea is to first do this via film 10 years earlier in 1931-32.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Christian Kracht about his novel The Dead. That's Kracht. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. We'll continue after this short break.
want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Christian Kracht about his novel, The Dead. It's a novel that takes place in a history we think we know, but it's an alternate history that begins with an event in 1970, the suicide of Mishima, as the key signature for the book that follows, which takes place in 1932.
Mishima does actually appear himself in the book. There's a scene where the Swiss film director, after he's left his wife in the arms of this film minister, he's sort of despondent and he travels through Japan and films this and that and films dull events and that are unrelated, which he will then make into a film himself. He's sort of saved from crying in a low tavern and taken into the house where this Mishima figure tries to massage him. So he escapes that.
He's afraid.
Yes, he's afraid.
Because if the book is full, of unarticulatable phobias.
Yes.
The young film director has always suspected but never confronted his father with liking other men. There are all sorts of phobic behaviors, but it's regarded as bad manners to talk about things that can't be discussed.
Absolutely.
And this, in turn, after all, my guest, Christian Kracht, is from Switzerland, and restraint and careful balance of appropriate statement is regarded as a gift in Switzerland and in Germany, and so the book is constantly cutting corners to escape. And any time we learn of an indiscretion, it's through a secret hole. A husband watches his wife having an affair with a Japanese director of the film ministry. This book has the gift of telling us that the world wants to reveal itself to us, but it won't come up and say, howdy do. We're going to have to read with great dexterity and caution as everything in the book reveals itself to be not what it seems. This may be in the wake of World War II, the art of film, that nothing is what it seems, that characters are disguising themselves as other characters, that everything turns out to be a function of plot and plot misdirection. But when we're looking at the cinema of Ozu, we're looking with great directness at the simplicity and sadness of ordinary life.
Yes.
Mizoguchi too, Bresson, Dreyer, there was a film whose purpose was for the film to penetrate the showiness of things and arrive at the heart, at the core, at the privacy of things. And this is what, gee, am I right? Can I ask you to approve of this? This is what the book has it at heart to say, that this great art form, which had the possibility of revelation, is instead constructed around concealment.
To arrive at the privateness of things is a very wonderful phrase. I would hope that it was so. I don't think I knew about that, but I mean, I guess if you draw that from this book, then I'd be very happy.
I think, you know, this book is a funfair. It's doing all kinds of surprising things. We're watching rehearsals and secret doings backstage, and Charlie Chaplin being a target for Japanese snipers. You know, this is who knows what this book has it at heart to do. The sadness that we get to witness in this novel, it looks like this is going to be a novel of concealment, of camouflage, where all of the secrets will reveal happy truths.
Well, but also the secrets of childhood will somehow unravel themselves into something meaningful, and the intense pain of things that happened in horrible things that happened in childhood of the two protagonists, the Japanese and the Swiss person, and it informs nothing. You know, it's just this sense of 10 years of horrible experiences in childhood and in boarding schools, and, you know, brought up to be essentially a little crypto-fascist, and then nothing happens.
Nothing happens. No. There's no rescue. The boy is mercilessly teased,
flogged,
humiliated,
yes,
flogged in his boarding school. And what is the result of that? That he teases and humiliates,
yes,
others.
Right.
There's no one who learns the lesson, I will never do that to someone else.
Right.
I will never mistreat someone the way I have been mistreated. By the final page, the woman whose misadventures we've been following ends with her face torn up.
Yeah.
That was what she had. She had her face.
Right.
The man who seemed to have a brilliant career ahead of him knows by the end of the book that long ago he made one perhaps good film and nothing after.
Right.
These are, I mean, we don't really get to, I mean, I know that I'm a fool to want to root for characters. They don't exist, they, you know, et cetera. But this is a satire, but it's one of those satires where everything gets torn down. Why?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't think I can answer that. Perhaps I should write a cheerful book.
No. I'm just curious. You know, here you are in a time when people, especially writers, are not writing dark books. And I know that the aspirations of the people in the books that have been translated into English are aspirations that are not fulfilled. As you know, I like books where everyone ends up as unhappy. I'm just saying I'm finding them fewer and fewer and further between. There's become some kind of sense in most American publishing houses that the heroes of books should end well, that someone be granted the right marriage, the right job, the right fortune. And you've done, you know, what books, the great books, do. Crime and Punishment isn't a happy book. Sister Carrie isn't a happy book. I'm not asking you to justify bad behavior. I'm asking you to tell me why you feel compelled to tell the truth.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm not. I don't think that's the truth either. I just have the feeling that certain experiences in childhood and early youth which have now come to the forefront in my own experience, have informed me also that I am not lying. You know, that I have not lied. This is important. I think that I've discovered that I have not been a liar. These past 40 years, and that's been quite a shock to me. That there is a sort of a lightning strike of knowledge that that I have not lied, and that may be the best answer I have is that I've been truthful.
It's a perfectly acceptable answer to me. I've been speaking to Christian Kracht, K-R-A-C-H-T. His book is brand new. It's published by Farrar Straus. It's called The Dead. I think it has a lot, honestly, to say about the history of film, the history of culture, the history of the world post-World War II. I think that the fact that a lot of it is ironic, that it conducts itself via pastiche, is part of the world it's describing. It's very hard to speak with the complete sense of disappointment that we would otherwise need to describe what's happening to us. And, of course, you know, in the long run, I'd rather find a book that finds a new way of telling the truth than one that trumps up old lies.
Thank you very much.
I've been talking with Christian Kracht, author of The Dead, published by Farrar Straus and Giroux. You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Michelle Escobar. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. And we're just reading this. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.